And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 798. It's a Monday episode. We're going to pick up where we left off last week, doing some ADP debates, but heading to the mound on this one. In order to help me do this, as always, on my early week shows, you can find them on Twitter at BreakingBen_T. Ben Tidd, how you doing, my friend?
I'm doing pretty well, Bubba. Your dog excited to jump into the debates as well, I see. Unfortunate timing there, but good. I liked doing the debates last week. It was good covering just random hitters, and it got me going with my prep. And we were talking before, I've already nailed down my initial catcher rankings and moved on to first base. So the ball has definitely started rolling for me.
Yeah, I was excited to get that text message from you over the weekend that catcher rankings are done. And then you mentioned in the Discord today that you started your first base rankings, and the Pete Alonso conversation began, which we will get to very shortly, as some of that maybe influenced it. We'll see. I'm looking forward to hearing your explanation there. But you're joining the party. This is good. You're only like seven drafts behind, but you're gonna get there.
I'm gonna stay seven behind too, probably.
Yeah, no, I need to slow down now that got some other things we were talking about before the show that I got to start focusing on to get going before I get crazy in drafting, and before you know it, the big drafts will be kicking off. But I will shamelessly plug, if you are not a member of the Patreon, Bubba the Bloom Patreon, that is, it's on patreon.com/BubbaBloom. I would recommend checking that out if you want to be in the listener leagues, because before you know it, we'll be taking signups for that, because those usually draft in middle to end of February. So that's not as far away as you think. Signups are usually in January, and we start putting people in leagues. We had 10 leagues last year, 15 team auction leagues on the NFBC, $50 entries, so a lot cheaper. We'll have to work and see what the prices are this year besides the cash prices. That has not been decided yet. And we might have a couple other little leagues before that Ryan and I are working on. So you got to be in the Patreon to make all that happen, to be a part of those leagues. So shameless plug there, but got to get that out there. All right, let's talk about some recent news. Mentioned Pete Alonso, big splash. He is headed to Baltimore. Alonso signs with the Baltimore Orioles. So Mets world, they've been on the struggle bus. Like they're a fun Twitter watch right now, depending on the day. But I know it breaks your heart watching all these things take place. But we'll stick to Pete Alonso here. You mentioned you might have him as your first base one. He signs with the Orioles. Should be in the middle of that order. A pretty good batting order nonetheless. So what are your thoughts on Big Meat Pete, the polar bear in Baltimore?
I think it's going to be good for him. You mentioned what I was saying in the Discord, how I started looking at like the top three, Kurtz, Vlad, and Pete, and I was I'm not taking the leap on Kurtz with the K-rate and it being his first year. I think there could be a little step back for him, and he could still be good, Kurtz, but I don't think he could push for the – I think it's more likely than not he won't be the first base one next year. And then with Pete, he just blows away Vlad with the power. So it comes down to what you want. And with Pete, he's averaged like 40 homers the last few years. His numbers are pretty insane. I never really rostered him. I think mainly because of the average and it's like how I've been drafting the last few years. But the only thing that really concerns me with Alonso with the signing is just the big contract. I think you and Ryan covered this last year, but someone may have debunked that it's not really a thing. It's kind of like 50-50 if these guys that sign big contracts do well or not, or well is in quotes. It's just if they kind of fall below expectations or not. It was kind of like the analysis, I believe. I think it was Michael C or something like that. Michael Cicchini, maybe. And so with Pete, I think I think him versus Vlad's a pretty value argument. And it was good to see that on Baseball Savant, Alonso's homers don't really drop that much if you put him in Camden Yards. And I say that mainly because of the wall that they messed with in left field. I think last year Alonso would have had, where is it? He would have had 45. He actually would have had more homers if he played all his games in Baltimore last year. He had 38 overall. He would have had 45 in Camden. So I don't think the park will affect him at all. And I like the Orioles lineup, even though I'm a Yankees fan. I'll say that they have a lot of young talent. And I think Gunnar will bounce back. I don't think Adley's going to be as bad as he was last year. They added Taylor Ward. So Pete's got a lot of protection around him, and I think he could probably challenge 120 RBIs again.
Yep, I'm with you. Like I mentioned in the Discord, I've been pretty aggressive, especially depending on where you're drafting via KDS, which we'll do more work on KDS discussions as draft season gets ramped up even more. But I've been very inclined to go Vlad early, either late first, early second, depending on your league, for the batting average aspect, and hoping he gets, you know, could get back to the 30 home run Vlad that we know. But the batting average is tremendous, because it's always the thing I say, I struggle with batting average. But then we've also looked at stuff after the last few seasons that, you know, power, like we keep ignoring, like not every, I am not as focused on power as I probably should be. So Alonso becomes more in the focus for me, especially middle to end of the second round with Pete, because I, to your point, I don't care Baltimore, he's going to still hit 35, 45 home runs. He's going to be up there somewhere. He's going to hit bombs as long as he's playing. And the 120 RBIs is tremendous. Like you mentioned that not a lot of guys are doing that. And that's a big differentiator as well. And if you say he's hitting 35 homers, there's 35 runs, let alone what else he'll do in that lineup. So there's a lot to like. And the batting average drains, he's kind of remedied to, he's at least, you know, hitting the 250, 260. I think he hit 270-ish last year. Like the years he was really down, it was almost a chasing thing. And he's gotten better with age on that, shocker to some. So he's never going to be the Vlad batting average guy, not a chance. But he's also, Vlad might not ever be the Pete Alonso power guy either. So you got to kind of pick your poison when you're in the draft room and how you want to build around it. And I found myself landing on probably more Pete than Vlad, honestly, but I have a fair share of both. And it enters the question, which we'll talk about probably in further shows, is then where does Nick Kurtz slide in? Both of you and I are kind of like on the, well, maybe the sophomore slump, or let's take a step back and realize he'll be good, but maybe not that good guy. But at the same time, he did hit 290 last year with all those home runs. So he kind of fits right in the middle of those two, if you believe in the production. So good place to be. Very interesting at looking at the position. All right, let's stick in New York with the Mets this time. Edwin Diaz leaves town. Edwin Diaz goes to the Los Angeles Dodgers, which sucks for me. But the bright side, I guess, for fantasy is it locks in a closer in LA instead of trying to figure out which three guys are going to split saves this year, Ben.
Absolutely. And yeah, it's been kind of annoying because the Dodgers haven't really blessed us with a pretty straightforward closer the last few seasons. And when they've been projected to be so good that you want a piece of that when it comes to save chances. And I think now we finally have that guy who will be the definite closer barring injury. And one thing to note is that, do you know what Edwin Diaz's career high in saves is since he's been on the Mets?
Mid-30s.
Not quite. He's got 32 twice. That's
okay. And the only two times people think, yeah.
Yeah, and the only two times he's been above 30 saves, it was in 2021, 2022. And I don't think I drafted Edwin last year because he tends to not get a lot of saves with the Mets. But now with the Dodgers, I think he should be good for 30, and I think 35 to 40 is probably a fair target for him this year. I haven't done my RP rankings yet, but there's a good chance he would be my RP1 because of the situation, the team, and his strikeout rate and how good he's been, especially when it comes to ERA. He's kind of like, he has like an every other year thing going where it's either like 3.5 or 1 point something for his ERA. So if the pattern continues, he'd be like in the 3.5 range this year, but I don't think you can really go off of that, but this shows the volatility of the relievers. So I think Diaz is probably the RP1 now.
Yeah, it's the Josh Hader syndrome. It's like, and you nailed it. It's the volatility of relievers. It's like probably two bad outings. That's all that is in the end. But what Edwin does do, he's a strikeout machine. He's one of the top strikeout guys. He actually is closer to Mason Miller than people think when you look at his numbers, because that's one thing Mason Miller, like everyone talks, but even me, guilty, stands out as he strikes out a ton of guys. Edwin's had his fair share as well. Like he's been pretty darn good. And you said RP1 potentially. That was the thing everyone was tweeting out when the signing took place. And it makes sense. In LA, they're going to win 110 games. They're going to blow a lot of guys out, but still 110. Good chance you sneak in 40 to 50 saves in there somewhere. That's just the reality of the situation. So I have to really dig in. I'm still leaning Mason Miller as my RP1. But with all these rumors of fire sales taking place in San Diego, that could change things, you know, as the tiebreaker, basically. So, yeah, great spot for Edwin Diaz. Great spot for the Dodgers. Awesome. But on the flip side, pretty much locks in Devin Williams to closing duty with the Mets, because they basically said they wanted Edwin and he didn't come back. So it feels like they're going with Devin. Does that excite you at all?
Yeah, he definitely turned things around, Devin, with the Yankees. And once he kind of got once they got Bednar, Devin was a pretty good setup guy for him. After watching him pitch, I'm surprised that he has been as dominant as he was in Milwaukee because he's fastball changeup. But I guess if the hitters, maybe he had better stuff the previous couple seasons, but because he did have his issues last year for the Yankees. So, but I think he's a pretty solid back end RP1. And we were kind of going over the remaining relievers before we started recording. I don't think anyone available in free agency is going to overtake him as the Mets closer. So he's pretty safe now, Devin.
Yeah, over the last seven DCs, according to Ryan's ADP tracker, Devin Williams has an ADP of 57. Like, if you look on the last 30 days, it's 72. So it's jumped 15 spots. He's gone as high as 36 in the last few, as low as 64, but most of them it's in that 40 to 50 range is where Devin's going now. So he's just outside of, he goes right by like Raisel Iglesias. Actually, he jumps Iglesias now over the last 7 days. So he's behind like that Edwin, Mason Miller elite tier. And then Devin's not far behind right now. So keep that in mind as you're drafting folks. He is on the move on those ones. A closer that, he landed in a spot that he probably won't save. Interesting here. But he got the bag. He's old. He's going to be 39 when this deal's done. So he's getting one big paycheck, which is good too. And Raisel Iglesias is only signed to a one-year deal. So Robert Suarez, who we're talking about, might save next year. Doesn't help us this year. Might save next year for the Braves, so keep that in mind. But Robert Suarez signs a two-year deal with the Atlanta Braves. The Braves have come out and said that Suarez is the setup man for Iglesias. Obviously, injuries, poor production, a lot of that can change. What I will say, since the signing the last 7 days, Robert Suarez's ADP is 86 right now. And in the last three drafts, this is maybe a bit – so that's four drafts. Could be a bit much. He's gone 54, 103, 292, and 75. So let's just say he's in that 86 range is the last 7 days state, but that's heavily weighted by one of those picks. Keep that in mind as we see more drafts. What's your thoughts? Robert Suarez going to Atlanta and likely the setup man for Raisel Iglesias.
Yeah, so one of the things NFBC has is the draft trends chart, and I have a 230 on the 8th for Suarez, a 216 and a 240 on the 13th, and a 292 on the 14th. So I think you read off one of those. So there's a little bit more extreme falls for him since the signing was made for Iglesias. But one thing I will say is if the price falls down there enough, and like I would say past 300 eventually for Suarez, I think he's an excellent handcuff if you do take Iglesias, because Iglesias has shown some cracks last couple of years. He was dropped in Fab Leagues in the first half last year. And Suarez is about as sure of a sure thing number two in any bullpen right now. So if you do take Iglesias in a draft and hold, I think backing him up with Suarez makes a lot of sense as your RP3 right off the bat. But then if you're not doing that in a DC, if something happens to Iglesias during the season, then in Fab Leagues, Suarez is the obvious ad. So,
and one thing I'll mention about your NFBC trends, that factors all drafts because I was going through the tracker. He had like a 240-something in a 12-teamer and like something like that in a Gladiator. So it's all gotcha. They're all over the board. Yeah. When you're looking at those trends, it's a good thing to look at, but just so people know different formats there. Merrill Kelly re-signing with the Arizona Diamondbacks in a two-year deal. This is interesting because he's a local boy, we found out, so it made sense he stuck. But first off, I guess, what's your thoughts on Merrill Kelly returning to Arizona? Because he's kind of just a boring but almost reliable old. But it also might mean the end for Zach Gallen when we're really thinking about this.
Maybe, but if you look at the Diamondbacks roster, or at least the rotation, it's pretty horrible. It goes Merrill Kelly, Ryan Nelson, Eduardo Rodriguez, Brandon Pfaadt, and Mike Soroka.
That is bad.
Yeah, so if they're planning on competing, I think they have to make another signing or two. But Kelly, he actually pitched a lot last year, 184. It was 2 years ago where he got hurt. 2024 was the year he only pitched 73 innings. But yeah, Kelly, he's been pretty serviceable last ever since 2023, he took a big step. Actually, no, I would say 2022 was the first year he took a big step, and now he's been a pretty reliable starter. He's going to be 37 in 2026, so that's a little bit of a red flag for me. The K rate isn't really there for him, but he's more like a he's actually a ground ball pitcher. Mediocre ground ball rate. I don't know. He's not going to pop in the underlying metrics too highly, I don't think. Yeah, his XERA has been above 4 the last 3 years. Almost a 4 XFIP. But I think at the right price, he could be valuable, especially in the draft and hold format.
He's a perfect draft and hold picture, in my opinion, because he's just so boring. It's what you need, basically. Big fan of that. I like Merrill Kelly. And where you're getting him in drafts, it's going to be very, very affordable, which is great. If you're looking at DCs right now, Merrill Kelly has an ADP of 246, last 7 days, 241. He went as high as 218 in the most recent draft champions draft. So he's getting a little steam, but still at that price point, he's going right next to Bryce Miller. Would you rather take Kelly or Bryce Miller?
Oh, Bubba, you're asking me to dig into the pitching pool right now. I'm not ready for that. I think so with Miller, let's see what happened with him. It was pretty bad, but
it's really bad.
Yeah, the K minus walk really dropped off. So, but he was injured. What did you say? What Miller's ADP was?
I got it right here. It is at 241 over the last 7 days. Bryce Miller's is 242.
Okay, so pretty close. Maybe in a DC, I would go Kelly, but in a Fab League, I'd maybe go Bryce. If that's a good answer, or an acceptable answer, I guess.
It's fair. While we're talking D-backs, I'll kind of skip down to the notes for a second. You mentioned Michael Soroka. He signs a deal. He had the injury-riddled season last year. He showed signs of being good. I know we talked about him, like the underlying metrics looked great. We should be optimistic here, but the injuries kind of derailed the entire season. Soroka's ADP over the last 7 days is 427. So he's going anywhere from like 385 to 430 over the last 5 drafts. Are you interested in a guy like Mike Soroka?
I am. I think I may have had him on every Fab League I had last year at one point. Yeah, I was preaching he was a good buy because of the whip. His whip on the year was 113, and that came with a 452 ERA. So I was just waiting for the ERA to catch up to the whip. And like you said, the injuries kind of kept him from doing that. But at that ADP you just mentioned, if it stays there, I will be drafting Soroka on a lot of DCs.
Yeah, I'm surprised it actually hasn't gone up more. I think it's just a minor boost that it's gotten since he signed. Maybe people are still timid, but I think I'm with you. It's at that point, if we're looking for innings, as long as he's healthy, they're going to throw him. Like you mentioned, the rotation they have, like there's no reason not to. So, yeah, I think it's a very intriguing opportunity. Josh Bell signed with the Minnesota Twins. I love this landing spot. Maybe I'm just over-optimistic. I like Josh Bell. He had a really good second half last year, Ben. He's always just been a steady guy that people, I think, are bored by because he gets traded all the time. He's been on a million teams, it feels like, lately. But if you just look at Josh Bell's stats, the dude gets to play. He's a switch hitter, which is beautiful. But he's played 140 or more games in 5 straight seasons, in basically 8 straight if you don't count COVID. So he's playing a ton. He's got 20 home run power. Other things are suspect. I'm not going to disagree with you. We're talking about a guy with an ADP of 435 over the last 7 days, went as high as 376 in the last draft, but potentially playing a starting first base. That's a pretty good price tag.
Yeah, 376 isn't that bad for Josh Bell. I think he was going higher last year, or definitely higher. Not by much, but he was definitely going a little bit higher last year, and at least now he's got the job, and he projects to bat third, maybe. I would say third, fourth, or fifth in a pretty subpar Twins lineup. But you know, the guys around him won't be the best. He at least will get a lot of plate appearances. He kind of fell into a platoon with the Nationals, I think, last year. But the Twins do love the platoon themselves. But their bench is all left-handed, and I think Bell would sit when it would be versus a lefty. So as the way things stand now, he's a full-time player for them, which definitely helps his value. And he's pretty safe bet for like a 65 runs, 20 homers, 65 RBIs, and an average that won't completely hurt you. So I think he's definitely a better target in a draft and hold than like a Fab League, but because the ceiling is kind of limited now, but he's just like another steady producer, kind of like Merrill Kelly, but only on the hitter side.
Yeah, better DC play, but I will say like in a 15-teamer, not a bad corner infield option a lot of the season. No. He'll get you some run there. Like, I already know in auctions, if I can get him for like $2, I'll be happy as can be with that. So yeah,
at 370, he could be a reserve pick for you.
Yeah, could be. Very well could be, and that'd be outstanding. So I'll have my eyes on Josh Bell for sure. Adelis Garcia coming off a horrific season with the Rangers. 19 homers, 13 steals at .227. Back-to-back seasons hitting below .230. The fall-off has been real after a couple of really good seasons. But the Philadelphia Phillies are taking a chance. Been a one-year deal on Adelis Garcia. And his ADP, I haven't drafted him all season, but it's been sitting around 275, 280 all draft season. And there's people speculating here. So what are your thoughts on Adelis Garcia going to Philadelphia? Because he should play some. Like, he feels like he's taking Castellanos' spot right about now.
It is. I think that's what who Russell Resource kicked to the bench for Adelis. I was checking my do not draft list that I wrote last season for this upcoming year. I didn't include Garcia in that. He was a good candidate for it, though, because of how bad he was. I did have him in a DC, and it was a kind of a headache trying to figure out if he's going to play or not, if he's going to be good or not. But he really fell off last year, Garcia. Some good underlying metrics still, but despite how bad he was, his K rate was still only 24.7%, which isn't horrible, surprisingly enough. Still had a pretty good exit velocity, 92 miles per hour. His barrel rate was 11%. Hard hit was almost 47%. So he's not – so those numbers are telling me he's not completely finished. And he's hitting in a better lineup now, presumably, with the Phillies, because we think he'll probably be the starter over Castellanos. And I don't know. I'll have to wait and see. But, I mean, his OPS was 665. His WRC plus was 83 Garcia's last year. So, and he was, even on the Rangers, he was sitting when he was healthy. So it left a bad taste in my mouth. And I don't know, once I sit down and do my outfield rankings, I'll have a better sense of how I feel about him. But he's still someone I'm kind of wary of drafting.
Yeah. Like I said, I haven't taken a share yet. I've avoided it at all costs. We'll see how it goes. It's a great spot, a great lineup. But yeah, I'm worried that times have passed and he is going to be 33. It's not like he's a spring chicken. Real quick, what are your thoughts on Castellanos now? Because like his profile makes me laugh. His ADP is 321 over the last week. It's 327 for the last 30 days. So it's not like he's getting a lot of love. People are all kind of like off of Casty. But I asked this, Ben, because I think Ryan and I talked about it. It was you and I probably on a projections show, I think. You know, he still hit .250 last year, 17 homers, 4 steals, 147 games. Like, not lights out, but when I read you that stat line and then I read you an ADP of 326, that's appealing to me.
It is, but if he's projected to start, now that he's on the bench for the Phillies, we think, then it's like, okay, well, you're drafting a short side platoon bat probably. So if the Phillies trade Castellanos or cut him and then he gets signed by somebody else and it kind of has the path to starting, I'll still be in at that ADP because I think, yeah, because we mentioned in one of the projection shows how accurate projections were on Castellanos and everyone was hating on his ear. And then we also, I think at the end of a couple shows ago, we were doing the outfield comparison for ADP. Yeah. And we saw Castellanos nearby, some players we were talking about. I go, wow, that's really late for Castellanos. And so I would be interested, assuming that his situation changes from where it is right now. But I just got to give a little more time before that happens.
Yeah, it feels like he's going to be traded, and that could be good or bad. We'll have to wait and see on what that lands. One more major than the other, neither one real major. Mike Yastrzemski, this surprised me. I knew he'd get signed somewhere, but the Braves signed Yaz to a multi-year deal, which that's the part that surprised me. We kind of know who he is. Weirdly enough, he's going to be 35 this year. I did not realize. I knew he was old, but not that old. But, you know, he's got 15 or more homers in 4 straight seasons. That's been quite serviceable. He does the little things, I guess what I'm saying. But he doesn't hit for average. Average has been disastrous all the time. But he's currently projected to put on the strong side of a platoon with the Braves. And his ADP is about 450 over the last week. I just drafted him in a BC 50. I didn't reach for him, but I drafted him knowing he's on the strong side of the platoon in Atlanta. What are your thoughts on Yaz?
That ADP, I think that's a good price. I was in on Yaz last year in the same scenario. You could argue that the Braves should be an upgrade. Still waiting for the Braves to click like they should be clicking. over the last couple of years, they've kind of been a disappointment. But I think, yeah, this is good. Definitely surprising. And then at the same time, this kind of kills Sean Murphy, his value, because I think he was maybe penciled in as the DH at times with maybe rotating out for Baldwin because they didn't really have a ninth option in the lineup. And now Profar slides to DH. Yaz is in the outfield. So unless they're facing a lefty, Murphy's sitting, and he's also hurt, I think, as well. I saw something that too.
Murphy's hurt, yeah.
Yeah, but going back to Yastrzemski, I think he's a great second outfield, like an outfield seven or something in a DC.
Yep, no, I'm with you. I love it. Absolutely love it. So hopefully that pans out. And yeah, Sean Murphy, T's and P's. It was cool while it lasted. Last bit of news here, the Royals and the Brewers made a trade that doesn't jump off the page or anything, but Isaac Collins and Nick Mears, who's a good reliever, but not for fantasy, for Serpa, who's another good reliever, not for fantasy. But I just want to ask you about Isaac Collins. This is a guy that at one point was having a run last year that looked like he's going to be the NL Rookie of the Year for a second. Then he got hurt. They had a baby, never really came back to fruition. But he was traded to Kansas City. Now, I got two parts to this. Is right now he's projected to start. That's a loose situation because they have options there. Second, they're still rumored to be trading for other outfielders right now. So I just tempering it a little bit. But the skills are pretty good with Collins, and his ADP is 383 over the last 7 days, as high as 296 over that stretch. Any interest in this scenario?
Absolutely. I had Isaac Collins in a couple, at least one league last year once he got called up. And yeah, 441 plate appearances in 2025. Collins had a 122 WRC plus. It was a 779 OPS. He has speed. He can hit for a decent average. Not a whole lot of power, but he's kind of old too. He's 28 now. So I think this is rookie year last year at 27. So late rookie. But 263 with 16 steals in 130 games, that's pretty useful, especially if he's going in the 300s. The 290, I think, is what you said makes sense after the trade, because now he's guaranteed, or well, not guaranteed, but it looks like he'll be the starter in Kansas City. With the Brewers, they had too many outfielders, so he's probably going to be a bench bat. But yeah, this trade helps him a lot, and he'll be something I'll be looking at once I start drafting.
All righty, that'll be the news for now, but there's a lot of rumors swirling out there, so we'll try to keep you up to date as best as possible. Let's get into some debates. Just it was a nice little eye-opening experience last week. We'll dig in some more this week now. And all these pitchers are within the top 200 of ADP over the last 10 drafts on Draft Champions. So since November 20th till December 15th, there's been 10 completed DCs. And these are players going pretty close to each other, is why I picked them. So Ben, let's start with two lefties going rather early in ADP. And we're going to go with Christopher Sanchez with an ADP of 31, or 30.9. Chris Sale, 31.5. So literally the sixth and seventh pitchers off the board. You got the youngster coming off a near Cy Young season. You got the veteran who 2 years ago was elite, a little banged up last year. He's coming back. Do you like the youth? Do you like the vet on this one?
So if anyone forgot, I have not done starting pitching rankings yet for myself, so I'm going to be going off the cuff here. But looking at what they did last year with their online metrics, I think I'd probably lean Sanchez just because he's younger, less mileage on his arm. I think he had a concern with his forearm at one point, and he also had a huge jump in velocity in spring training, Sanchez did. So he was arguably the highest riser come like main events and all the March drafts. Whereas Sale, he was just dominant again. He had like the rib injury from diving or something like that, something weird. Yep. Yep. So looking at their underlying metrics of what I have on my sheet, they're both pretty close and they're both pretty good at the same time. So between the two of them, pretty identical numbers. But I just think that Sanchez is a better – I've learned that no pitcher is safe, but I would rather lean with the younger pitcher than I would with Sale, who's always seems to have something now, and he's just so thin. He's like, what, 36, 37 now? So I would just lean Sanchez for the youth, I think.
Yes, I like them both. I've made the case for Sanchez on a couple of another show, so I can't remember which one now at this point. But I did make a case that some people are saying, well, he overachieved and this, that, and the other, and he's a heavy sinker baller. And you're not wrong in a lot of those comments. But at the same time, he also improved in other categories, and he's young, and who says he can't make another pitch mix change? Like, he's already made a slight tweak over the last couple seasons. We've seen that the innings are there. He knows how to limit damage, even in that ballpark. I like him a lot. So I'm with you on Christopher Sanchez. I take him over Chris Sale. It's very close. Like, if someone wants Chris Sale, not going to argue with you at all. He's got the longer proven track record, if you want that argument. Totally fair in that regard. So I'm going Sanchez, but Sale's just fine. Now we get a little different. Another vet versus youngster here. Jacob DeGrom coming off 170-plus innings out of nowhere, it feels like, in an amazing season. Kind of fell off as the season went on, though. Who knows what we could attribute that to. Then you got Hunter Green, who has Cy Young stuff but can't stay healthy. We have these two going right next to each other, Ben. Right now, Jacob DeGrom has an ADP of 44. Hunter Green, 46.1. Who do you like in this one?
This is tough. I think we covered Green a little bit during the projection review, or I guess preview, because there were this upcoming year's projections. And the one thing that sticks out in my head was the homer to fly ball rate. But at least in 2024 for Green, it was pretty low. And last year it was 11.9%, which when you're someone like him who's very fly ball heavy, almost 50% fly ball rate last year and also in 2024 for Green, that could be risky. But at the same time, he throws so hard, he's so nasty that a fly ball from him may not mean the same thing as a fly ball from like Merrill Kelly, as someone we were talking about earlier. So if the batters probably are hitting Green's fly balls as well as they would someone like Merrill Kelly is what I'm trying to say. And then DeGrom, yeah, he miraculously stayed healthy for the first time since like I was in high school, I think. So that's a joke. But with DeGrom, because the problem with Green as well is that he hasn't really pitched that many innings himself. I think DeGrom's 172 last year was more than Green's career high of, I think it's 150. Yeah, 150 and a third is Green's career high. And then going at the skills again, pretty similar story, kind of like with Sale and Sanchez. A lot of the numbers are pretty similar between Green and DeGrom that I look at. Both ran pretty low BABIPs. DeGrom's was 230 last year. Green's was 245 with elevated left on bases. So it's kind of a wash there. I know Green beat him by like almost 4 percentage points in K rate. I don't think Green had an arm injury last year. I think he had an oblique, which when you throw that hard, it could be concerning though. So I don't know. This one would be another tough one. I would probably lean Green if I had to. Just I'd lean on the side of youth again.
Yeah, I lean Green as well. Ryan and I were doing a Bloom board recently, and Green's one of those guys that if he could stay healthy for a full season, it's always the if, but we've said it with other guys, he is a top five pitcher, like fantasy-wise. His stuff is that good. So I'll take him over DeGrom. We know DeGrom's an ace. He's elite, but I'm also worried like that innings jump. He's getting older. Anything can happen, but it's kind of like the Sale narrative. I'll take the young guy that I think can go to the moon, barring something, an injury, which we can't predict, even though there is a bit of a track record with this one. But, yeah, I'm gonna go Hunter Green as well. I probably won't have many shares of either. But if I do a FOMO draft, Hunter Green would be on that team for sure, because I do think, like, if you can get him at that ADP. Now, here's the kicker. In order for me to want to take Hunter Green at that ADP of 46.1, I'm probably going pocket aces because I want him to be my SP2. I don't want to leave a draft with him as my ace. And if he gets hurt, things are already unraveling quickly. So that's the catch for me. All right. We got a three-headed monster here. I like two of these guys a lot. So I'm looking forward to hearing what you have to say here. We got Freddy Peralta, 62.3. Blake Snell, 62.6. Joe Ryan, 64. Where do you sit on these three? Because I'll say this much, Joe Ryan might be my most rostered player right now.
I love hearing that because I was a big Joe Ryan fan last year. Yeah, man, I had Blake Snell. He burned me in a couple spots.
He's good at that.
Yeah, that's what he's known for. Ironically enough, Ryan had the worst swinging strike rate of the three. While Peralta ran pretty lucky. He had a 243 BABIP, 85 left on base. Both lucky in the opposite directions. But the K rates for all three are almost identical. They're all like 28.2 last year. This is an interesting comparison how they're all right next to each other. Man, I would probably go... I'd go Snell third of the three, and I would go... whoever I say first of the other two, I know you won't be mad because you both love them both. So, man, I'll say Freddie because he's had a pretty good track record of, I know you always point out his 200 Ks like the last 4 years or whatever it has been, or 3 years for Peralta. So I'd probably go Peralta, Ryan, Snell, but Peralta and Ryan are very close for me as being the highest of the three.
I agree on all counts, basically. I have Freddie 1, Ryan 2, Snell 3, but Ryan is darn close. And I just love the fact, like, I think I have, like, I've double tapped the Freddie Joe Ryan combo on a draft already. I have zero problem starting with that if you wait on pitching. I can live with that. Because the thing with Freddie that I love, and I've pointed out recently, is the innings now, we've had three straight years, because that was like one bugaboo, is can he do it? Well, he went 165 in 2023, then 173, then 176. So we're seeing the innings are there. So he'll never be a 200-inning guy, but he doesn't have to be for what he does, because he gets you, like, at worst, his ERA, his highest ERA is 3.86 over the last 5 years. He's had two ERAs in the twos over that stretch. So, again, maybe it's not a consistent ace ERA, but it's good. You mentioned the strikeouts, which I would always mention, of course. But the other thing I love to see about Freddie is some people were like, after 2024, there's 1.21 whip. They were like, oh, no, what about the whip? Well, it was 108 last year. But prior to that, 112, 104, 0.97, 116. Like, he's had a couple, like two out of his, you know, two seasons out of his eight seasons or whatever has been a bad whip. So he gives you good ratios. He gives you strikeouts. And more often than not, he's going to at least stick around to give you a chance at wins. You can't predict wins. We had 17 last year, for crying out loud. That's pretty good as well. So, yeah, I got Freddie 1. Love Joe Ryan, though. He's another guy. He's not, like, to the ceiling like Hunter Green, but I feel like Joe Ryan, if he ever put together a full season and got closer to 200 innings, he could put something really sweet together. Not sure it's going to be in his profile, especially with the Twins. That's the other thing. The Twins look like they're going to be bad this year, so keep that in mind. But a couple minor things there. All right, this one I'm really curious what you have to say on this one. Kyle Bradish, 76.5. Spencer Schwellenbach, 80.9. Two guys that dealt with injuries last year. One guy finished the season on the mound. One did not, Ben. So where do you sit on these two?
Well, I really love Schwellenbach going into last season, and everybody else did as well. I remember he went like in the fourth round in one of my main events, or even the third round. It was wild. And I think I misspoke on a previous pod, but Schwellenbach had I think he fractured his elbow, right? I think he had the Michael King injury when King was on the Yankees. And I think we dove into Bradish on a recent show as well. And I think Bradish had some walk issues in the past. I'm going to pull up his historical trends just so I have a better look at what he's done recently. His walk rate's been 9 in 2022, 6.6, then 9.2, then 7.9 last year. In 2023, his biggest workload was also his best walk rate, so that's good. But he has shown issues kind of with the walks in the past, Bradish. The swinging strike, I think it jumped a lot. So he had been around 11 or 10% Bradish with the swinging strike rate. And then in the small sample last year, it jumped to 14.6. And I think that's probably why he's where he is right now with this ADP. I can't remember where Bradish was going in previous drafts at ADP, but it definitely wasn't this high. And then Schwellenbach, he's kind of back to where he was. Everything underlying number-wise looks awesome for him last year, and he was still valuable despite missing, 2 months with the injury. But since it's a broken bone and Michael King has come back from that same injury, and King went from being a reliever with a broken elbow to a great starter, so if he can do that, it's possible for Schwellenbach to go from being a great starter, broken elbow, to being a great starter again. So I'm not as – we're just saying that now, I won't be as worried about the elbow with Schwellenbach. And then Bradish, he didn't have a full year from Tommy John either. So I think I'm going to go Schwellenbach over Bradish with all that said.
Yeah, I'm going to go Schwelly too, hoping that he comes back from his injury just fine, because I was with you. I was all in on him last year. I think there is a pretty good floor with a high ceiling there, barring injuries with Schwelly, where Bradish, I'm still super concerned with the longevity of his situation. It was great what he did, but small sample, and he had trouble staying healthy previous injuries. So I need a little more love with this one. But I just want to get your thoughts, because there are some people that obviously love Bradish. The ADP of 76 has shocked me. I thought there would be a little more playback there for a guy with his injury concerns, I guess. But it's like 32 innings last year, 39 and 30 year before, major league innings. Obviously, there's rehab innings, but it's been a while since we've seen Bradish out there. But when he's been out there, even last year, it was very, very good. So I guess you take the chance and see where it goes. And maybe I should, you know, I always say maybe I shouldn't worry about injuries so much. Take the talent and work with it. Maybe Bradish could give me the talent part of it. Who knows? All right. Now we got another vet versus youngster. And I like both these guys a lot. I have shares of both. Nick Pivetta, 86.2. Yuri Perez, 86.8. Going right next to each other. Pivetta got a ton of home run luck last year. Yuri Perez is young and awesome. Where are you at on this one?
Yeah. Pretty interesting to see them right here. So with one of the fun stats I heard is that Nick Pivetta has never had an ERA in the threes in his career, which is kind of weird when you think about it. But looking at his stats, it's true. He's been above four or below three for the first time last year. And yeah, you mentioned the home run luck. He had his best homer to fly ball, Pivetta, 9.7%, with a fly ball percentage of just below 48%. So extremely lucky there. His xFIP was 3.85, so a run higher than his 2.87 ERA. His xERA was 3.95, which is more than a run higher than his ERA. This is Pivetta I'm talking about. And Yuri, so they both had contact issues. Their EVs and hard hits were roughly the same. Both EVs were above 90 for the two of them, 90 miles per hour. Hard hits were 45 or higher percent. But one thing that Yuri crushed Pivetta in, a couple things, was the swinging strike rate almost 3 points higher. Yuri's is 13.3. Pivetta's is only 10.5. Yuri's xERA was 3.26. His CR and xFIP were kind of in line with Pivetta's, a little bit higher, but his K rate was higher too. And they both had really lucky BABIPs. So Yuri, but I think we mentioned Yuri at on a projection show. So Yuri had a pretty fortunate BABIP. His was 240, but the left on base was 65%. So if the left on base regresses, and also too with Yuri, it was his first year back from Tommy John. And he was a massive prospect for the Marlins. So I think that Pivetta, with the swinging strike rate being so low for him and the fly ball rate being so high, especially if he gets traded out of San Diego, I think he could be back above a four ERA next year. The whip should be pretty good because he doesn't walk many batters, but I think I would probably go Yuri. The only thing that could hurt is the wins. But what did Pivetta have last year? He had 13. I could see Yuri getting 11 with the Marlins maybe. But I don't know. It's a tough decision. But the way it looks at right now for me, I'd probably go Yuri ahead of Pivetta.
Yeah, and if we're talking wins for Pivetta, again, if the Padres sell off like they're talking, it ain't going to matter there either. I love Pivetta's skills. He finally put it together in one season. We've been waiting for it. But the skills did also diminish a bit, to your point, which is a concern. Yuri's great. Yuri's really good. Just needs to stay healthy. The way he finished the season was outstanding. Like, leaves a ton of optimism. So, yeah, at that point in the draft, he's your SP2 or SP3, depending on how aggressive you are. I'd go Yuri at that point and start trying to shoot for the moon type stuff. TDK says, Nick and Yuri is a really hard choice. I go Yuri, but you got to have security back elsewhere. Yeah, that's where we go to some of these upcoming pitchers to get that security we're discussing. And we go to the olds, the borings, the ones I love here. We have Sonny Gray checking in with an ADP of 110.5. And then you have Kevin Gausman. I wanted to make sure we paired these guys together. So yeah, Kevin Gausman, his ADP is 118.1. So about 8 picks apart for the two. Sonny Gray, he's got a new home in Boston this year. So they'll be facing each other in some divisional matchups. How do you like the Gray versus Gausman situation?
Well, I'll start off by saying I think I prefer these guys over the other two. I was going to say that I feel like Jiří and Pivetta are both going too high for my liking the way it looks right now, but I don't have rankings yet, overall rankings, but it seems a little pricey for both of them. But with Gray and Gausman, yeah, Sonny going to Boston could be interesting because of the monster and just how Fenway plays as a hitter's park. I'm not sure how he'll survive there, but he'll get plenty of run support for the Red Sox. And then Gausman, I was completely out on him last year, proved me wrong. And a lot of what he did supported his results. I believe it, what was it? Did you read what his actual ERA was? Gausman's was?
No, I did not. He, I'll pull it up. He was much
3.59. So he actually was kind of in line with the estimators. His CRX like 3.7, 3.8. XERA is 3.67. The walk rate was great for Gausman. Very lucky with the BABIP, though. I think actually one of his issues has been a high BABIP historically. He had a 262 BABIP Gausman where he's been more like at least three. I remember in 2022 he had a 363 BABIP for a full year. That's kind of wild it was that high. This is definitely the best. Actually, it's the best of his career, regardless of season length, 262. So he definitely got lucky there. So maybe he's more like a higher threes ERA pitcher. And his K rate has dropped down a lot the last 2 years compared to where it was when he was like a true SP1. So they both have their issue. Well, the main issue for me with Gray is the ballpark, probably. And Gausman, I just don't know how the skills will hold up. Man, maybe I'll go Gausman slightly, but they're pretty close in my mind, I think. I which is why they're at the same point ADP. So I don't know. Maybe I'll go Gausman over Gray.
Yeah, I'm going to go Gray over Gausman, but it is close. I have shares of both right now. I love the consistency of the ratios. Like last year, Sonny Gray just got hosed in a big way. He should have ended the season much, much better, but his BABIP went through the roof up to 329. That kind of ruined things there. But he's projected once again to have solid ratios. The K's are there. He eats up innings. He's getting 180 innings in two out of the last 3 years, which is big. K to walk over 20%. Love everything about Sonny Gray. If he can just get some of his luck back, that'll be big. Obviously, I'm not as worried about the ballpark as much as the defense behind him is going to be a tick back in Boston compared to St. Louis. And a guy with almost 44% ground ball rate, that could affect things. We'll have to see how that plays out. But I'll take Sonny Gray over Gausman. Again, like them both. I think Gausman's still just fine. Got to rely on that splitter a lot. That could, tilt things once in a while. But I'll go Sonny Gray slightly over Kevin Gausman. Now we got two youngsters that are going in between and around these guys. That's why I didn't want to do old versus young again, but I wanted to get your thoughts on these two youngs. Chase Burns has an ADP of about 112 right now. Jacob Mizorowski, the Miz, 121. So they're going nine picks apart. Miz going just behind Gausman. Burns going just behind Sonny Gray. We know Burns showed that lights out stuff, strikeout material, but he's also in Cincinnati. And Miz also did too. Both of them had a little bit of a roller coaster from time to time. So which youngster would you put your faith in? Because I have zero shares. And I don't know if I will.
I think I'm going to go with Chase Burns here. Mizorowski had a notoriously high walk rate in the minors. And after dominating his first few starts, he finished at 11.4 for Mizorowski's walk rate on the season. Burns beat him in K-minus walk by almost 7 percentage points. So that's a pretty big difference. And then really what hurt Burns was he got what happened to like Lodolo a couple years ago. His BABIP was 360 against, which is extreme. It's like I was mentioning that with Gausman a minute ago. And the hard hit against him was pretty high. It was almost 46% for Burns. And when he throw that hard, I don't think you're going to sustain a hard hit that high against you. And his swing strike rate was almost 16% for Burns, whereas it was still really good for Mizorowski. It was 13, but 16 is – that's like elite stuff. And, do you remember what Burns' injury was? That's one – I didn't have him, so I wasn't in tune with
No, I didn't have any shares either, so I can look that up for you.
What? If it was an arm injury, that's definitely concerning, but – I don't know. It's like Mizorowski definitely isn't free of his concerns either. So I think just on the what we saw last year, I would probably lean Burns over Mizorowski.
Right flexor tendon strain.
That's a scary injury. So, but I mean, Mizorowski throws like 95 mile per hour sliders. So I don't think I should hold that against Burns in this debate. But like to your point, overall, drafting wise, I don't know if I'd be likely to take either one. But between the two, I definitely go Burns over Mazurowski.
And I agree with you there. Like, I don't really want to take a chance on one or the other, but I'm going to lean Burns. I think you have a better chance at it's still a crapshoot with the two, but better whip, at least ratio-wise. I think you got better luck with Burns. And we've seen, like, Miz can strike a lot of guys out, but we've seen Burns consistently be elite, where Miz likes to walk guys. And that's where the whip thing comes into play. I remember I had Martin Sokolsky on last year, like right around when they both were getting called up. And he said with what he saw in the minors that Burns would be better than Miz a lot, like in the ratio departments for sure. So I'll trust the prospect guys on this one, and I'll go Burns over the Miz. Both will have some highs. Both will have some lows, hopefully more highs than lows. All right, a couple more here. Pablo Lopez, a guy I still can't figure out why he's going at ADP 134, Ben, almost 135. Then you got Ryan Pepio who's going, okay, so Pablo 134.7, Pepio 134.8. Obviously, Pablo had the shoulder injury a few years back, was banged up again last year, though. Still been pitching pretty well while he's out there. Pepio, he showed why people are very high on him. The Rays just got to let him go, is how this one works. So what are your thoughts on Lopez versus Pepio?
Well, the first thing I wanted to look up, at least with Pepio, was his home and away splits, because last year the Rays were in George Steinbrenner Field, which is Tampa Yankee Stadium, and he actually had a better home ERA and whip than on the road, which was surprising. If it was much better on the road and then bad at home, I'd be a little more sympathetic towards Pepio because he pitched in a minor league ballpark for half his games, but it didn't come out that way, so it's kind of interesting. And I think I mentioned with the projection show about Pablo being at this ADP, I'd probably take him every time almost, because I think he had the injury that Joe Ryan had, which is the teres major strain, which, yeah, it's in like your shoulder area, but it is a muscle. So it's not like it's a rotator cuff or something structural. And then the underlying numbers between the two are very similar. Their swing strike rate was identical. Pablo had better ERA estimators, except for xERA. They're essentially tied. Much better hard hit numbers for Pablo, allowing fewer hard hit balls than what Pepio did. Lower walk rate for Pablo as well. So yeah, I think I'll lean Pablo in this case. I think the only thing that really set him back, I think, to this ADP was just the injury, and I don't think it's an injury that will necessarily repeat itself. So I'll go Pablo.
Yeah, he had that one strain, then he finished the season with a mild forearm strain, but they've already come out and said he's fine. Like, he's pitching as he normally would in the offseason to get ready. I always kind of play that by ear. Anybody that's got a forearm strain, we probably don't feel great about, but I'll take my chances with Pablo on this one. I do like Pepio a ton. I think there's a ton of strikeout upside there with Ryan Pepio. And going back to the ballpark, as he mentions, a definite plus, even though his splits were surprisingly different. But I'm going to go Pablo. He's another guy I have a lot of shares of already this season. Because, like, to your point, that 80, like, I usually wait on pitching. So he's either an SP2 or an SP3 for me. Like, as an SP3, I'm in love with it. Like, that's a place I really like to be. So, yeah, I got me some Pablo Lopez. I'll take him over Pepio in this match. Now we're talking young guys. Now we get dicey. We got Mr. Helium himself. And for now, it's calmed down, but we'll see if that picks up again. Treya Savage has an ADP of 142. But going three picks later at 145 is one Bubba Chandler, Ben, who many were all in on last year, and then the Pirates just never called him up, and he wasn't overly impressive, but it also felt like he didn't care anymore at that point. So do you take the chance on the postseason wonder and Treya Savage, or do you take the pedigree on Bubba Chandler, who was like the top pitching prospect last year, who actually should be ready to roll with Pittsburgh this year?
Well, my initial lean was to not pick the Pirates pitcher because of how poor I can keep going with the P's, apparently, how poor they are with getting wins for their starters, a good Paul Skeens. But then in his last three starts, Bubba won two of the three starts, and he should have won the third one. The Pirates actually won that game, and he allowed one run in six innings. And he wasn't actually starting when he first got called up. He was out of the bullpen. His first three outings were all four innings for Bubba. So good they actually let him start the games to end the season. His first start actually got crushed by the Brewers, it looks like, assuming that he started that game. But yeah, so that all that said, I have a little more confidence in Chandler being a reliable starter for next year. And then, yeah, with the Savage, he was pretty filthy. He only had 14 innings, though, in the regular season. Hard to say a lot about that or about him with only that as his true sample. And the one thing that was surprising, too, is that in those 14 innings, his walk rate was 11.3 for the Savage, which is a lot higher than Bubba's 3.2. So, I don't know. Since they're going at the same range, I think the wins should separate Savage from Chandler. And he has a better swing strike rate as well, but the hard hit against Savage was really bad. Like 94 mile per hour, average exit velocity, hard hit of 61.5%. But like I said, it's 14 innings, so it's hard to really gauge anything off of that such small sample. But I think just from the team concept or the team, like considering the team's winning and all that stuff, I think I'd probably lean to Savage. But Bubba could have better ratios. I just don't know how much better necessarily.
Oh yeah, we're going. The name of the show. We're going Bubba on this one. I was a big fan of him last year. I had one share in a 15 because I just don't like the stash, but I'm ready for him to join the Paul Skeens ranks and the rest of that team. Let's not forget Jared Jones is supposed to be back this year too, so that could be a good one. This Pittsburgh team, as TDK says, they might not be that bad. They're actually trying to spend money. I know that's a loose term with them, but I'm excited about Bubba Chandler in this ADP. I think there's a lot of upside here, and we can see where that goes for sure.
Their lineup, I'll just say, TDK, it's O'Neill Cruz, Jared Triolo, Brian Reynolds, Spencer Horwitz, Nick Gonzalez, the password, Sawinski, Joey Bart, Nick York. They could be trying with the pitching staff, but they're not going to score any runs. So
hey, they're still trying to sign guys. I'm just kidding.
Oh, yeah, the win was, we offered a contract to was it Schwarber? Yeah, but he tore it up and spit on it. So, yeah, but they were excited about that.
They tried. All right. Now we got another battle of the olds here. This is make Ryan's very happy. Luis Castillo, 154. Sandy Alcantara, 157. Luis Castillo is just that steady stat line you can almost pencil in. Home road splits are a bit wonky, but in the end, he gets you your number. Sandy Alcantara, we knew him forever as he's the accumulator. But this past year, coming back from the injury, it was up and down, especially down early on. Finished really strong, though, like really strong. So when we're looking at these ADPs now, would you rather have the Luis Castillo who we kind of know and love, or do you want to take a chance on Sandy continuing to develop where he finished last year?
Oh, man, Bubba, it's a tough one. I think I was pretty out on both of them last year, but because of how well I believe Sandy finished, I just want to look at his game log just to be sure.
It was very good.
Yeah.
At least the underlying stuff is very good.
Yeah, so what I did pull up was his rolling graphs on my end, his XFIP and his swing strike. His XFIP, his rolling 10-game XFIP peaked around 5.2 on May 28th. By the end of the year, his rolling XFIP was down to 351. So it's just a massive decline in his XFIP as the season progressed. And his swing strike was bottomed out around 7% in the middle of July. And then it finished around 10.7%. So a pretty big increase in his rolling swing strike for Sandy Alcantara, which you love to see because of he definitely struggled coming back from Tommy John. And I think that was the big issue. But he was going seven innings looking at his game log now. Starting in August, he had 6 games of seven innings, which is pretty good. He touched 7, 9, 8 Ks in a handful of those outings. His ERA dropped about a run in those from August to end of the season. So a lot of damage was done at that point, but dropping it a run is pretty good in my book. Not a lot of walks either. Only one or two walks in August for the most, except for one game against the Braves. He had 4 walks, but that was the start of the month. Other than that, though, he kept the walks in check. And I just think Castillo's is going in the wrong direction. So I'd rather not draft either, but I'll go Sandy in this case.
Yep, I'm with you, Sandy. For me, I'll at this point of the draft, now you're talking SP4 range, maybe five, depending on how you're drafting. I'll take that Sandy upside. Yeah, Castillo's fine, but I agree. I just feel it's continuing to slowly go the wrong direction, and those home road splits are glaring. So if it's a guy you can't really trust all that often, but he's your SP4, like, you kind of want to trust your SP4 more often than not, if you can. And Luis isn't really there. So I'm going to go Sandy as well. I loved what we saw to finish the season. You mentioned all those stats. I looked into it a bit for the recent Patreon post about the last 2 months of the season. Swinging strike and ball percentage gainers going outside ADP 150. Sandy stands out there. He's one of the top, like, 10 in those regards, improving as the season went along. So love some Sandy Alcantara at this point in time. I've never been a Sandy guy, but at this ADP, you don't need him to throw 200 innings and accumulate. He can throw his 160 or whatever, and you'll be okay when all things are said and done. So like some Sandy for sure. Two more here. Let's talk about the battle of the lefties. Shota Umaga returns to Chicago. Mixed reactions to that in the Cubs world. But Shota, ADP of 173. Ranger Suarez looking for a job, ADP of 172.7 and 173.3. So going about a half a pick apart. Shota's your ratio king. We need the strikeouts to come back a little bit, though. That would help a ton. Ranger Suarez, pretty darn good with ratios as well. Potentially better strikeouts. So this just might be a thing we're waiting to find out where Ranger signs before this changes. Where are you at on these two lefties? Because I love them both, but I lean Ranger over Shota.
Yeah, when I was going through the list you sent me, my lean was thinking I would have picked Shota. But now I don't know. This is tough. So you mentioned the key upside was Suarez. I do see why, but at the same time, Shota's swinging strike was more than 2 points higher than Rangers last year. So Shota should have had the better swinging strike rate. I remember having, because I had Shota on a ton of teams last year, and just him not getting keys was so annoying because he was in, like, the swinging strike rate was there. I remember at one point it was like 14%, but his K rate was like 18%. It was just ridiculous how few Ks Shota was getting. And then I was thinking when I was going through the list, that the walk rate would be in Shota's favor. It is, but only not by that much. Shota's walk rate was 4.6 and Rangers was 5.8. But the thing is, you have a fly ball pitcher versus a ground ball pitcher. And when their walk rates are that similar, it makes me want to lean with the ground ball pitcher. And like the CR and the XFIP and even the XERA are so in Rangers' favor, where maybe he, because the K rate is so low for Shota as it is, I don't know if banking on the swinging strike rate to fully capture what their K rates should be to matter that much. So I think I might agree with you and lean Ranger, but I this is someone I loved Shota last year, and he was ended up being great for me. But I don't know, Suarez was pretty good too. And to your point about where he goes, but the one thing though too is that it depends on what your team needs, because if you need a whip help, Ranger's not your guy. Because yep, he's good for like a 1-2. And Shota is, despite all the negativity I just said, because he's a flyball pitcher, his whip's like closer to 1. So I think it really comes down to your team build and your staff. But I don't know. I think I might lean Ranger. It's tough, though.
Yeah, like I said, I lean Ranger. I've taken more Ranger, especially if I'm feeling comfortable with my early pitching ratios, potentially. I like my Ranger. But I have taken a Shota where I'm like, okay, I need to kind of harness some of this in, and let's hope he gets that strikeout rate going like we saw in year one with Shota. So both options are awesome at this point in the draft. I think I lean Ranger and hopefully lands in a good spot because my shares would appreciate that. All right, the last one we have here are two youngsters. We have Cade Horton, who was him and Trevor Rogers led the second half in pitching. And his ADP is 195.2. And then you got Shane Boz, ADP 199.5. He gave up a lot of home runs and joined George Steinbrenner Field. Got him good in that ballpark, but he also shows some really good strikeout stuff. So are you going to buy into Shane Boz, who, again, was also a big-time prospect at one time? Injuries kind of derailed things. Finally saw, for the most part, a full season last year. Or do you go to Cade Horton, who had a magical second half, but maybe overachieved a little bit? Where are you at on those two?
Yeah, Horton definitely overachieved. That's been one of the big stories I've heard early in the offseason. And yeah, so this is it's actually a pretty good argument in Boz's favor. So like with Pepiot, I pulled up Boz's splits, and at home, Boz had a 5.90 ERA and a 1.46 WHIP versus a 3.86 ERA and a 1.21 WHIP on the road. Yep. So a lot of that was he had roughly the same amount of innings home and away, but Boz had 18 homers allowed at home versus 8 on the road. So he just got crushed when he pitched in Steinbrenner Stadium. But then looking at the two of them on the year as a whole, Boz beat Horton in K minus walk. He beats him in all the major ERA estimators. He has a better swing strike rate. He had a higher walk rate, but his K rate kind of did more than enough to combat the higher walk rate that he had compared to Horton. And one thing that I think kind of isn't surprising to hear, but Horton's BABIP was 258. So I think that's kind of what led to him being such a good streak in the second half. And that's why he won the Rookie of the Year, I think. Did he win Rookie of the Year? I forget.
No, he did not. Drake Baldwin did.
Oh, yeah, Baldwin did, yeah. But it made Horton a finalist. Yep. So, yeah, just going off of this line out there, I think I would have Boz ahead of Horton.
Yep, I'm with you. I actually got to talk about both these guys in the panel at FPAS, and I've written about Horton, but I have written about Horton at the Patreon this year on the offseason. Horton's really good, but he did have a lot of overachieving metrics, to your point. You nailed those, and I think he'll still be fine, but I think to expect a duplication of what we saw in the second half, that's asking him for a lot. And if you believe you're going to duplicate the second half, take him much sooner then. Like he's too cheap if you believe that, but I don't. And then you nailed the Boz points. That's why I've been highlighting him. His strikeouts have been really good, especially they improved as the season went along. It's that home road split is just dramatic. And I'm not even like he doesn't even have to. You just cut that home in half when he goes to the drop, and we're sitting pretty. And so, yeah, I'm with you. I think there's a lot to like about Shane Boz. Now, stay healthy. That's what we're asking for, but plenty to like in those two. Both good pitchers. But I think Boz, this is one of the player regrets saying this out loud. One of the easier ones for me to pick between, which means everyone go draft Cade Horton right now. All right, Ben, that'll wrap us up. We ran through that real quick. That was nice. We got all the news, got the debates. Any final thoughts before we wrap it up? Ben will not be back next week. I have one show scheduled next week where I'm lighter load for the holidays. So Ben will be back right around New Year's, give or take. And we'll see him then. So final thoughts, Ben, as we head out to finish your season, at least.
Well, Merry Christmas to you, Bubba, since I'm going to be talking to you on the air until afterwards. And I mentioned this to you off air, but there's a chance that I'll be in my first draft or waiting for my first draft to fill when we come back to record next. So we'll see what happens, though. I have to finish my rankings and all that good stuff.
If it's a 150, I might have to just see what Ben's
going on. It will be a 150. I'll do my lesson. I'm not doing a 400 off the bat. I'm doing a 150 first.
Might have to see what Ben's up to over there. It really has some good podcasting fodder. But, yeah, you have a Merry Christmas, my friend. The listeners love having you. So it's not a timeout. It's just my schedule is crazy over the next, 10 days. So I've penciled in a couple recordings. I got James Anderson on Wednesday, for those that are keeping track at home. And then I won't reveal the next week's show until I actually record it, because I want to make sure it all happens. But we'll keep you covered for the most part, and Bubba and the Bloom will be going as well. So hope everybody has a good time. Ben, happy holidays, Merry Christmas, and I'll be back with you guys later this week. But for now, this was Bench with Bubba, episode 798. Catch you all next time.